I am so excited to bring on my dear friend, Kaylin Lehman, for today's episode. Kaylin is CEO of Simplified Coach and has worked with big brands like Evernote, Eventbrite, the Stanford Business School, and so many more big names to simplify the people side of their business. And today she's here to do that for us. She is an expert in team building, and she's sharing tips on how to know if someone will be a good fit for your team's personality and what we as business owners can do to set new team members up for success. And without further ado, let's dive in. Hi, welcome to Marketer for Hire. I'm your host, Sunny Logsdon, and I understand that not all business owners have a marketing background. That's why I'm here, to provide tips and advice on how to build the right team to unlock your business's full potential without wasting precious time and money. Each week, we'll break down complex marketing concepts into easy-to-understand pieces so that you can delegate confidently. Whether you're a business owner with a marketer on your team or you're just beginning the journey of hiring a marketer, I'm passionate about helping you maximize success. So if you're looking for ways to get the most out of your marketing budget, reduce frustration from lack of results, and provide clear, strategic marketing direction to your team, this show is for you. Hi, Kaylin. Welcome to the show. I am so excited to have you here. I'm so excited about everything that you are going to be able to share with our listeners. So before we go into that, will you just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do? And you're a small business owner, so you can relate to that aspect of the audience as well.
Definitely. My name is Kaylin Lehman, and I am the co-owner and co-CEO of a company called Simplified Coach. And we focus on group workshops, executive coaching, any kind of group training, specifically around leadership and communication, which has many, many layers to it. We started the business in 2008, which was great timing, because there was a really bad recession at that time for you young'uns listening. So we gave away our services for a good year and a half before we really took off. And I am lucky enough to be in a business partnership, which is similar to a marriage, with someone that I really trust and respect. And years later, that's still going strong.
Yeah, I feel like there's so much even in that answer that we could dig into. Just the fact that it's tough to start a new business, and giving away services for a year until you take off is part of the small business game. And I don't think that's something that's talked about enough. I think that we see businesses once they've been developed after that year when you've been giving away services. And there's this misnomer that you start a business and you're seven figures within the first year. And it's just not true. So I know I'm taking us off script a little bit, but tell us a little bit about what that looks like and what you learned from just that very beginning time.
Yeah. And I do think it's different for different people. I know different people have different philosophies around don't give your services away because then they're devalued. Those types of things. For Terry and I, we went about it in a couple of different ways. She used some of that time during the recession. We were in Silicon Valley at the time. You literally could not get phone calls with people because the recession was so bad. And she used part of the time to go get more certifications. She loves the ongoing training. I mean, most of us in training love training. So many people had been laid off that there were a lot of job support groups. And I realized I could volunteer in those groups for people looking for jobs. Mm-hmm. And they're not necessarily your audience for marketing, mm-hmm. but it was keeping my skills sharp is how I looked at it at the time. But through that group, a couple of different things happened. One thing is that I met a gentleman who was running another similar group, and he asked me to go speak to his group. And he was the head of learning and development for a biotech company, and they brought us in, and they were our first big clients.
I love that.
It was wonderful. And then another thing that happened is I met a woman who, she was a salesperson for people that do trade show booths and that type of thing. And they had a beautiful place in South San Jose, and she said, I will invite all of my people once a month and provide lunch into our place for you guys to come do a lunch and learn topic if you'll invite your people there too. So anybody that was considering us, we would just invite them to this lunch and learn and go and give a free hour on a topic. And we closed business that way as well.
Yeah, that's great. When starting a business, you have to get creative and you just never know where those contacts are going to come from. And all you need is one really great client and yes. it can set your business off and running. That's yes. similar to how I started my business too, with one main client, and then it grew from there. So I love hearing yeah. that, because I think just getting past that starting stage can be a real challenge. So thank you for sharing that with us.
And it's hard to stay motivated. I mean, for all of you out there, it usually does not happen overnight.
It does not happen overnight.
You got to be in it for the long haul.
That's right. Blood, sweat, and tears. That's right. I brought you on specifically because you are an expert in leadership and team building. And for small business owners, you know, we don't have those same resources where we get to call somebody who has worked in team building and leadership across companies and just has the depth and the breadth, the experience that you have. And so I want to hear just a little bit about, as someone who specializes in building teams, what has it been like to build your own team as a small business owner?
That was another thing that I would say, a lot of people do go into business, as you have encouraged them to, Sunny, with really excellent goals that are laid out with specific metrics that they want to reach. And our only metric at that time in 2008, during what was a terrible recession, was to be busy enough mm-hmm. to pay our bills. And it was just Terry and I. If we could get enough business to keep busy and work full time, awesome. And that did happen. By 2010, 2011, we were very, very busy. In fact, 1 year around the holidays, we were both complaining about how exhausted we were. And she said, hey, by the way, we did this to ourselves.
Right?
Yeah. We did do this to ourselves. We forgot that part. And that was the point where we knew we needed some support people. I mean, that was the first thing we hired, was an admin. The second thing we hired was someone to help us on the financial side, building proposals. Before that, we were doing all our scheduling, building proposals, all of that ourselves. But we brought two people in part-time to help us with that. And then from there, we had aligned with companies, and we worked with any size company, but we had aligned with companies that, coming out of the recession, were incredibly successful. They were growing fast. And in order to work in those organizations, typically you need to bring a team to that organization. They want to call a vendor and have choices. And so once we got to that point, Terry and I went back to our motivation, why we were in the business. And what we concluded with just conversation was that, you know, owning a business is not easy. Owning a small business is really not easy. And there's a lot of stuff about it that is, you know, frankly, mind-numbing or crappy. Mm-hmm. And if that is the case, why would you do it? Like, why were we putting ourselves through this? And at the end of the day, we were putting ourselves through this because we wanted to do the work, obviously, but we also wanted to love the life that we had, whatever that meant. For me, I had little kids at the time. I wanted to be able to pick my kids up from school most days of the week. Terry had a middle schooler at the time, and she is a singer. She loves to sing in bands, and she wanted to be able to, some Fridays, take off early and drive to wherever the gig was so that she could sing. And so when we realized why we were in it, we realized that really my job is to support her in her dreams. Mm-hmm. Her job is to support me in my dreams. And then we grew from there, looking for people that had a similar mindset. Mm-hmm. So as people would come to us, as we would interview for different positions, it was, what are your dreams? And how can we contribute to your dreams? And this is where small businesses are lucky compared to large businesses. That's not very sustainable when you have 10,000 people and you're growing really fast. But for us, we have been able to always have that conversation. And it's part of our onboarding, is talking to people about what their dreams are. Mm-hmm. And then us being able to try to thread that needle. So our chief training officer, first trainer we ever hired, she takes a month off every summer and goes and does service work in a different part of the world. Sometimes she takes her family, wow. sometimes she doesn't. But mm-hmm. we love that she gets to do that.
Yeah, that's a huge benefit of working for a small business where you can customize what each person's work experience is, because there's not 300 other people or 3,000 other people yes. that, you know, expect to have the same experience. That's really cool. Exactly. And I love what you said about going back to the vision for your business when you're hiring and thinking about, okay, what is that we wanted for ourselves in this business? What is it? Where do we need the holes filled, right? In order yeah. to sustain the vision that we created when we first started this business.
And it is built on similar value systems, similar motivations, but we also consciously do look for people who have skills that we don't have. Mm-hmm. And that's been helpful also. We have to fill those holes. She and I are a lot alike, not exactly alike, but a lot alike. So being able to fill the holes with people who think differently and ask different questions and are able to focus on things differently has been useful.
Right. Because why would you hire somebody that can do what you do? You want to take those things that are drudgery work for you and push them off your plate to somebody who's really good at it. So as you think about that, I love that you ask people, what's your vision? What is it that you want? You know, what are your dreams? What do you want to get out of life and out of work? What are some tools that people can use maybe to figure out, is somebody right for my business?
There are different ways to do it. This is old information, but if anyone ever read What the Dog Saw by Malcolm Gladwell, he wrote a whole essay in there about job interviews. The consensus being that job interviews only show you how good someone is at interviewing and nothing else.
Right, right. Yeah, it's like the old question when, you know, what are you bad at? And it's like, well, I'm really bad at not working hard. Really, really a hard worker.
I'm a perfectionist.
Yes, yes.
That's exactly it. And that is all that will show you unless you're willing to do a structured interview. He goes into what those are. But most of us don't like a structured interview because we're limited on the questions we can ask. And it doesn't feel like it's an authentic conversation, which is what we want to have. There's also that ridiculous movie a few years ago about the interns at Google. I don't know if you remember. It was a ridiculous movie with Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But they talk about the question of, you know, when we don't know if we're going to hire someone, we talk about the layover test. Who would I want to be stuck with on a layover for 6 hours?
Right. And that's actually a really great question, isn't it? Yeah.
Right. It's actually a really good question. I might go back to that at times. I do think that there are assessments that are out there that if you're familiar with those, then you don't even have to use them in any kind of formal way. You can just know enough to be able to ask the right questions. So a really simple one is DISC. DISC is similar to MBTI, Myers-Briggs. They're all based in some of the same psychology, and they've been around forever. But they don't show anything. Like, they don't show if you're a psychopath or a sociopath or if you're successful. They don't show any of that. They only show, what is your preference? What is your tendency when it comes to giving and receiving information? That's it. That's all. But you can really quickly, once you know that model, ask questions that allow you to figure out, how does this person prefer to give and receive information? And the answer to those questions can help round out your team. So if, for example, Terry and I are both pretty direct on that model, we also have some influencer in us as well. Well, that means we probably need the opposite side of that. It might be someone really analytical. Someone really analytical is going to catch things that we miss because of the way they think. Those are their preferences and tendencies. They're also usually better at writing down all the details, which we could easily skip over as well. So you can ask the right questions that can get you some of that information to find out if they have some of those tendencies that you don't have.
And it goes back to filling the gaps. You have to really know yourself well in order to know what you need to hire for. So it sounds to me like maybe the first step a small business owner would need to do is take the test themselves. And figure out, you know, who am I? Where am I good? Because sometimes we just don't see those blind spots. We need something to reflect it back to us.
Yes. And it is easy to not see yourself the way others may see you. But the assessments are ones you fill in yourself. So at the end of it, even what you get back, it's what you said about yourself, right?
Oh, that's interesting. So that brings up a question. So how do you find your blind spots? If the test is going to just reflect back to you who you think you are, you know, I mean, wow, I am so great.
Yes, exactly.
And so what about the blind spots? How do you find those as a small business owner? Because that's one of the challenges. Before we started recording, we're talking about a mutual friend who has her own business and was able to write her website, you know, during the pandemic. And Caitlin, who's been working on her website, said, man, that would be so hard to do because I want to bounce it off other people. And the same goes for personality because Terry can reflect back to you in ways, hopefully very respectful ways. I know you guys have such a great relationship, you know, that helps you to maybe see some of those blind spots. But for somebody that is maybe just in those beginning stages, how do they find them?
There are different ways, and there are inexpensive, easy ways, and then the more comprehensive ways. We will do 360s, and those are very comprehensive. And we get down to what are your strongest personas? What are the questions you should discover next and that type of thing? But pretty easily, you can take something like our DISC assessment. It's $99. It's not expensive. But the first three paragraphs it gives you are general characteristics based on the way you answer the questions. And the way we have people debrief these themselves is they go through every single sentence and they either agree with it, they disagree with it, or they can say it's neutral, situational. But after they do that, and there's a few other pages that you can do in a similar way, we really suggest you take it to someone who knows you well and say, how do you answer this?
Yes. So let me make sure. So I'm going to back way up here. Let's talk about what a 360 is. For people listening who are going, okay, I know a 360 is a circle, but what is that from an assessment standpoint?
Yeah. So a 360 can show up different ways, but typically it's a point of view of you from different perspectives. So a true 360, in our opinion, is yes, it can be your peers. Yes, it can be if you have a boss or an investor or somebody like that who really helped set you up. They could be one of them. A mentor could be one of them. But we believe family and friends should be in the mix too. Mm. In fact, they're the ones that usually rate me the lowest anyway.
Love you too, family and friends.
But especially my siblings, I'm like, yeah, you saw me when I was 13. I can see why you maybe rated that way.
Yeah, that's so funny. Our siblings know us the best. Yes.
So a 360 is supposed to look at you from all these different facets, because many times we show some people one side of us and we show other audiences a different side of us. And that can be useful, but it can also bite us in the butt. It could be a blind spot. So for example, I had a client once whose directs loved him, thought he was fantastic, but his peers really rated him very low and didn't trust him. And after he reflected on it, I mean, my point was, hey, you know how to do this. You know how to build trusting relationships. What are you doing with your directs that you're not doing with your peers? Which was a good question. But then the second conclusion that he came to, other than he needed to build up that ability for his peers to see him differently, was that peers typically get you your next job. Wherever you're going, it's usually your peers that are like, hey, did you hear about this company or that company? Or I know so-and-so that works at that company. Mm-hmm. And that was a great opportunity for him to turn around and focus time on building those relationships with his peers in a trusted way.
Yeah, I love that. That makes a lot of sense. And you said when you go through 360 with someone, what I understood you to be saying is, let's say I took, is there a specific test that Simplified Coach has that I would take? Is that, and then you take your clients through the output from the test?
There are different ones. So for example, there's just a regular 360 that we can do with clients where I'm going to spend 3 hours with you and really get to know you. And then you're going to give me a list of 15 people, let's say, that I'm going to call. I'm going to ask them all the same four questions. And then I'm going to pull out patterns and themes. And I'm going to build out this whole document that gets shared with you. But there's also a very kind of down and dirty and excellent way to do it through a tool called Tilt 365. Tilt 365, meaning 365 days of the year. You can actually rerun this if you wanted to. Tilt is an assessment that's based on character strengths. So do you have integrity? Are you likable? Are you visionary? Are you able to focus when you need to focus? Mm-hmm. And you can take the Tilt, rate yourself, and then launch it to 30 people, let's say, all the various audiences. You code them in there. It is tilt365.com, but you code in, are they peers? Are they directs, et cetera? Once three have answered, you yourself get that notification in your inbox and you can see where those three are averaging you compared to where you average yourself. And that continues to grow and build.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's a great tool for small businesses who aren't to the point where they can bring in Simplified Coach yet, but need some of this feedback as they grow their team.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And I would say it's very cost effective. It might be $250 for the whole year.
Yeah.
So you could take it, send it out to people, which, by the way, anybody you're working with, even clients, appreciate the fact that you want feedback. You manage it yourself. But if there's one area that you've decided to work on or strengthen, you can turn around and 6 months later, launch it again and see if you've made progress in that area.
Yeah, I really love that. That's great. What about when you've hired somebody? And I know you've done a lot of training going into teams and helping them work through challenges that teams might be facing. So, you know, in a small business, it's a huge investment. It's in any business, it's a huge investment to hire someone. But in a small business, the percentage that you're putting toward a new hire is just such a huge percentage. And you know, generally the small business owner is literally is coming out of their pocket.
Yeah.
And so it's a scary investment to make. So what happens if you do hire the wrong person? What is that point where you say, okay, I want to work on this? How do you go about that? And to get more specific with this, we're thinking more in the marketing realm, but really it can be any type of employee.
I think it depends. There is no perfect science to any of it. We are lucky at Simplify Coach. We have hired people that most of them have been with us a very long time. But there are two of us that are able to have these interviews and bounce ideas off each other. An example of mistakes I think people make, I think sometimes they hire for skills and not motivation. And you've really got to get motivation right. Recently, a little more than a year ago, we hired a new EA. And we interviewed two different people who both were skilled. One had a lot more experience and was very buttoned up, very sharp. And my tendency was to go for that particular candidate. My business partner, Terry, said, yeah, except look at her goals. Her goals are to be an EA for the CEO of, you know, Meta. Let's say that was really what she wanted. Yeah. So she would not have been in it for the long haul. And that was me being attracted to her skills, not her motivation. And it was taking my business partner saying, hey, what's her motivation here for me to see that? And it was absolutely the right decision to hire the other person who really was newer to the game, but wanted to support people like us and learn her job through people like us. So that's one thing that I would say is a mistake that people can make. Another one that people can make is when they don't set up the proper expectations. I think having really candid conversations about the type of work that someone is doing and bringing up the hard stuff is important and incumbent upon the person doing the interviewing. So we're a distributed team, like a million teams are, but we were distributed before COVID. And I think when you're on a distributed team, it can get lonely and it can get boring. And being able to talk to people about what are you going to do when you're feeling drained? Because sitting in front of your computer all day with no one around can be very draining to people.
Yes.
And so having that conversation about what energizes you and what's the typical way that you get energy when you're feeling low and that type of thing. And giving people permission to have those conversations with you. Like, okay, well, if we bring you on, I want you to be able to raise your hand and say, hey, I'm feeling really drained. I'm going to go to a coffee shop and spend a couple hours working there. That type of thing, because you got to be honest about those types of things. In my opinion, there's no way the person interviewing can guess what the day-to-day is going to be like unless you're the one explaining what the day-to-day is going to be like. I think that's very important. I would say another thing, if you can, and not everyone can do this, and you would be able to speak to this, especially with marketers, Sunny, but do you ever hire through third parties?
Hire through like a placement agency?
Yeah, like a placement agency or a temp firm, that type of thing.
Yes.
We've done some of that, and I've found that to be really useful because it's a good chance to try people out, and they're trying you out as well. You want it to be a good fit for both parties.
Yeah, I love that idea. And you know, with marketing, if it's not coming from another agency where you do have the opportunity to have them on a temporary basis or there's not a trial run, what I often suggest is giving a what I call a ghost project. And that is a project that is relevant to your business. And if it's something that you are actually needing done, you can pay them on a contract basis and see how they implement. Or if it really truly is a ghost project, then a lot of times that's something a little bit smaller that doesn't require too much work, but is the right project so that you can see, do they implement? Do they think through this? Do they attack the challenges in the way that I would hope that my team member would, right?
Yeah.
And I like what you said too about looking at their motivation and setting expectations. I don't know if you see this in the big companies that you work with as well, but a lot of times what I see in small companies is that they don't know what they need. They just know that they need help. They know that their plate is overflowing. They know that their calendar is overflowing and that there are all these things that they're unable to get to, but they haven't gotten really specific about what it is that this person is going to do. And so, of course, you know me, everything comes back to a marketing strategy in my world. And so I want them to have a marketing strategy so that they can clearly define, here's what we're looking for in this person. Here's what I am going to be able to put on this person's plate, because without that, it's very muddy and they're hoping mm-hmm. that they can come in and quote unquote save them. And that's just not the way it works with a hire. There's a lot of training. Yeah. There's a lot of specificity of skills, especially in a marketing role. So,
and I think you could do, and that would be an interesting thing to do also when you are overwhelmed, you could say, I'm going to pay you on a contract basis to follow me for 72 hours. Like, be on my calls with me.
Sure.
Right. Be in my calendar with me. Understand what I do during the day. And then take a week and come back to me and tell me what I need.
Oh, that's great. 72 hour hire. That's a great idea. I love that.
Time. Like, you don't want to be unfair. You've got to pay people
for
their time and value.
Yeah.
In the meantime, they also get an idea of what your life is like and whether it is too chaotic, the work is too chaotic, or maybe different kind of work than they like to do.
Yeah. And you can find what is their motivation? Because for some people, it might really excite them. Like, I can get you so organized. Yeah, and that's totally. What you want is somebody that is like, you're a hot mess. I can get you organized. Yes. Whatever that looks like, whatever the small business owner needs, but somebody that actually enjoys that, right? Instead of going, oh my gosh, So I love that idea. I think I might start using that one, the 72 hour contract. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, so, why not?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So what about, are there any lessons that you see in the big companies that you work with? Because you work with giant companies, household name companies, and helping them with their leadership team, their team building. What are some things that you see with these big companies that maybe we can learn from in our smaller businesses?
This is not original for me. Brené Brown talks about this too, but I do think there is a big crisis of businesses being nice, but not kind. So nice businesses create a culture where we're all saying all the right things, but then we're also talking behind each other's back or denigrating each other behind each other's back and not giving people real information. Brené Brown says clear is kind. Kind is you give people clear information of this is what I need, or this is what I see you doing, or this is what I see me doing in reaction to you, whatever it is. I think people cannot be expected to thrive if they're not getting clear feedback. So I think that's definitely across the board, small business, large business, something that's happening. And I think the other one is back to something we touched on earlier, which is clear expectations. When people don't have clear expectations, they're not going to be as successful. Unless you just get lucky. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can get lucky always, but clear expectations are much more difficult to actually do than to say. And I have made this mistake. Years ago, we hired a dog sitter that somebody recommended because we were going to be gone for about 10 days. I didn't want to put the dog in the kennel for 10 days. This dog sitter came over, met us, met the dog. I asked her rate. She gave me her rate, showed her where everything was. And then I left her to dog sit the dog. And that was the end of the story till we got home. And when we got home, our plants were dead. There was dog poop all over the yard. There was mold in one of the dog water bowls. And when you tell that story, you think, wow, that dog sitter sucked. But the truth was, I never set the expectation of what she was going to do for that money. Mm-hmm. I never said, you charge $100 a day. What do you do for $100 a day? Here's what I'd like you to do for $100 a day. Mm-hmm. So I think we can all miss that step sometimes.
Yeah, I like that. It's because there are assumptions. We make assumptions that someone is going to do the same job that we would do if we had that role.
Right.
And if we don't express what we expect them to do in that role, then we don't know what their view of it is. We don't know that their expectations are the same as ours. Yeah. I'm assuming that dog sitter did not come back, though.
No. And that's what I was going to say. The ramifications of that are so much worse. So for me to have to go back and have that clear conversation with the dog sitter meant that she would feel differently about working for me in the future. Whereas if I'd had the first conversation initially, it would have been a much more positive experience. And it's true for anyone we hire on. So if we hire someone on and we go back later and go, you missed the mark, we're going to immediately put them in a situation where they don't feel as psychologically safe. And if they're not as psychologically safe, they're going to take less risks. They're not going to be as creative. And so chances are they're not going to be as good as they could have been if we had set them up for success early on by giving clear expectations.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times in small businesses, kind of back to what I was saying about the plate is full, that time isn't taken to define those expectations and to really sit down and think about it. Are there any tools or any formats that you like to use for brainstorming those expectations?
I tend to think of expectations in a similar way to when I learned geometry. Do you remember learning geometry?
Well, I don't remember when I learned geometry, but I'm now tutoring my kids in geometry. So, and they wouldn't say I'm tutoring. They'd be like, Mom, you can't do it. I'm like, what? We got to the right answer.
Yeah, I don't think I could tutor in it. I don't have those skills anymore. But I do remember my math teacher, the first time she explained a proof in geometry, is she said, I think, you know, using me as an example, Kaylin, what would you do if I told you to go open that door to the classroom? I was like, I'd get up and go open the door. And she was like, no, actually, first you'd put your feet flat on the ground. And then you would move your body forward and put weight into your feet. And she started breaking it down into those little steps. And I tend to think of expectations in that way. If I was coming in blind, what would I want people to know? But I also believe that there's something really important about including people in the mix. So if I'm going to hire someone in and part of what we're going to do together is define the job description, let's say, right? Small businesses don't even have time to figure out the job description. So maybe we together figure out the job description. Maybe we together talk about what those expectations are. They might have better ideas, but you need to be there to poke holes in it because otherwise they may be thinking that you want, you know, a gorgeous house with the most high-end appliances in the kitchen ever. And you're thinking, no. You know, I just want GE.
Right.
So you still have to be involved in that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like what you said about just the specificity of, nope, first you have to turn your legs, you put your feet on the ground, you put your weight on your feet. And sometimes it's about maybe even just taking notes prior to even thinking about hiring is, you know, what am I doing? How am I spending my time very specifically during each part of my day? What are the steps to that? What's the, you know, for a marketer, it's, okay, what are the steps that we're currently going through to create our content, to understand our customers, and just all of that, compiling it, and then deciding what to pass along very specifically. One of the things that I like to have business owners do is create SOPs so that it's a basically step-by-step process. Here's exactly what we do in order to get this done. And if you have that written out, you can always go back and add to it. If you hire somebody and they're reading it and they're saying, okay, well, here's how we post social because you have these steps. Then if they miss something, it's my fault, not theirs. And I can say, oh, well, you know what? You forgot to put the hashtags on because I forgot to put on this that you're supposed to research hashtags. And so that goes back to what you were saying earlier, rather than going back and correcting, it's always easier to do it up front, and it kind of provides a place so that it can become the owner's responsibility or the person who's hiring their responsibility rather than the new employee.
Yeah. And we forget the role that technology can play in this for us now too. It'd be so simple if you were training someone in marketing that you were bringing on to record a Zoom of how you would do something. Right?
Yes.
How would you pull up a spreadsheet? How would you fill in the spreadsheet? And you can talk over it. And there's other tools that help you with that too. There's a million different ones out there. But you could do something like that. And then it's right there on file forever until something changes. And then you can update it as well.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. Video is a beautiful thing because also you get all of the intonation and it's more conversational. And with that, I think the person can even go back and they can transcribe the video so that, you know, it's also in written form, but then maybe the business owner doesn't have to spend the time going in and writing it all down. They're just recording as they're doing. So I think that's a great way to, honestly, it's almost a reflection tool in some ways so that we can understand what it is that we're doing on a daily basis and then set those expectations for somebody that we're bringing in. So all fantastic suggestions.
Yeah. And a small business owner, I mean, as busy as they are, even if they were just recording some of the random stuff they were doing through the day,
it
would be very helpful to whoever they ended up bringing on.
Right. Yes, I agree. I love that idea. So you've given one book for sure, and that was What the Dog Saw by Malcolm Gladwell. And, you know, it is an older one, but I also think that those things are so great to go back and read, especially when you're in the process. Maybe the first time you read it, you weren't going through what you're going through now in your business. You weren't hiring, you weren't a business owner, whatever that is. And anytime we learn information, it's always through the lens of what we're going through. So I love the idea of going back and rereading that book, actually. And then you mentioned Brené Brown in Clear Versus Kind. And which book title does she talk about that? Do you remember?
She was talking about it on her podcast when I heard it.
Okay.
But I imagine Darren Greatley would have a lot of stuff in there about clarity and feedback. So I know she even has a Darren Greatley feedback checklist or something like that that you can download from her site.
Yeah, that's great. So Darren Greatley, we have two great book recommendations that people can go back and read if they want to work on some of their leadership skills, which ultimately, you know, as we grow teams, it's really those leadership skills that are so important. So is there anything that we haven't covered that you think might be important for people to hear?
You know, don't be hard on yourself. I'd say that you're going to make mistakes in hiring. We all do, but learn from them. Figure out what the mistake was.
Yeah.
Were you in a rush? Did you just want to fill a hole because the pressure was on? Like, what is the mistake that was made? Mm-hmm. So you will make mistakes, and you'll make mistakes that really have nothing to do with you. You know, someone may get transferred or a life circumstance changes what they are doing. And I found when that happens, it's sometimes good to go to that person and say, hey, you were great in this job. I understand why you need to leave. Do you have anybody you'd recommend? Mm-hmm. Do you have any friend that, you know, that might have your type of skills? Because I found people that way as well.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And they might have feedback for us too, even though it's hard to sometimes hear that feedback. But what do I need to do differently next time? So people exiting are sometimes brave enough to tell us the things that we need to hear. So back to those 360 reviews. Yeah.
And then going back to those values, you know, we talked about that early on. Mm-hmm. I think those values end up playing a really big role because as the company becomes more successful, you're going to want to go back to those values each and every time. I think it is worth the time, no matter how busy you are, to know, here are the things I value most. And I want to live a life that's congruent with that in my business. And anyone I bring on, I can orient them to those as well.
Yeah, values is definitely not something that you set and forget. If you don't keep them front of mind, then you're not following them. I love that. So if anyone wants to learn more about you, learn more about Simplified Coach and what you do, where can they find you?
Simplifiedcoach.com, new website, thanks to Sunny.
Yay! Well, and you guys did it. I just have had the pleasure of looking at it a few times. Yeah.
Yes, you have. And you've given us helpful pointers too. Simplified Coach, we're also on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on LinkedIn, and we're on Facebook.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time today. This has been a great conversation. I've learned so much, and I know that those listening have as well. So thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Marketer for Hire podcast. I hope you've gained valuable insights to help you delegate marketing so that you can confidently get out of the details. If you enjoyed the show, will you do me a favor? Will you hit the follow button and leave a review and a rating? And if you've heard something that you think will help another business owner, be sure to send them a link to the episode. I'd sure appreciate it. And most importantly, before you go, I just want to say that I know your time is so valuable as a business owner, and I truly appreciate you spending some of it with me today. Thank you, friends, and I'll see you next time.